UHB Power Hitters is a slice of life from every corner of the nation, every type of builder, developer, and manager. After all, it takes a full spectrum of talent and ability to create the housing needed for a nation as wide and diverse as ours. Greetings and welcome to another exciting NAHB Power Hitters. I'm your host, Linda Hoffman, coming to you from the smoky Sierra Nevadas, 6,500 feet above sea level with an air quality nearly as high at a hazy 225. I'm a big Johnny Mathis fan, but I've had enough smoke in my eyes for three lifetimes. Today, I am delighted to introduce Ed Easley, president of LMC Development, a division of Lennar. LMC is the nation's fourth largest developer in a close run for total units delivered, with another 31,000 in the pipeline. In many aspects, Lennar is a turnkey organization, developing, building, acquiring, even managing product throughout the nation. Lennar was once predominantly in the urban core. Today they are everywhere, well, anywhere that makes good business sense, from high-rise, mid-rise, garden, and podium properties. Ed, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Linda. Hook 'em horns. I'm in Austin, Texas, and I'm a Longhorn.
Go Longhorns. Ed, you've worked with all the bigs, JPI, Crown Pacific, Discern, Windsor, racking up more than $7 billion in deals over the course of your career. The industry has given us all a run for the money with one crisis after another, from pandemics to wildfires to social unrest to lumber and supply prices, and well, I'll just stop there. What have you experienced on your sides, and how have you overcome the challenges, perhaps even creating resilience for the future?
Well, I mean, these clearly are probably some of the most challenging times that we've ever faced. I mean, with the social unrest, we've got fires, we've got hurricanes, we've got COVID-19. So there's a lot of things going on. But I think one of the things that's really begun to stand out is I think our home has taken on a whole different meaning now. You know, whether it's an apartment or whether it's a single family residence, it's really, it's not only shelter, but it's now your gymnasium, it's your form of entertainment. It's a safe and healthy place for most people. So I think, Lennar and LMC, and I think everybody in our industry is really trying to figure out what is that going to mean going forward and what sort of changes are we going to need to make to continue to, you know, serve the needs of our residents and homeowners and everything. And I think that's a big thing. It's a big challenge. I think it's going to take and, really force our industry to evolve in a lot of different ways.
Does the pandemic have a long-term impact on projects coming into the pipeline?
Clearly, there's been a pause in our business, but I think people are beginning to take and be forward-looking and beginning to think about when and how do we restart. At LMC, we're committed to starting four projects between now and the end of the year. One project in California, one in Denver, one in Atlanta, and one in Tennessee. And we're beginning to see the capital markets loosen up. People are interested in sticking their toe into the market again. And I think one of the opportunities is I think there's going to be a slowdown in the construction cost escalation. We think that's going to be slowing down here in the next 6 months or so. It hasn't really slowed down. You haven't really been able to notice it just yet. But the other thing that's important is most of these projects aren't going to deliver until the last half of 2022 or the first half of 2023. And so what that gives you the opportunity to be to be one of the early projects in it when the economy's recovering, and that's typically when it's the strongest. So it gives you the opportunity to, be one of the early movers in the, when the markets recover.
That's fantastic news. In fact, the best news I've heard yet. Much of Lennar's development is in-house. What's the strategy behind bringing it under the roof line, and how does that pencil in a cyclical business?
Well, okay, so we're a fully integrated company. We have development, construction, property management, and asset management in-house in all 13 of our offices across the country. And I think what it does really is it gives you more control. You're not depending on a third party property manager or a general contractor. Everything's in-house. And I think we work really well together. We focus on collaborating. We focus on everybody having a seat at the table. And I think the end product really shows that. I mean, if you've got everything in-house and you're not relying on third parties and you just control things, you know, you control everything that you're dealing with and, you're not exposed to, you know, third party, problems a general contractor might have or your third party property manager might have that have nothing to do with your business. So I think it's a great model.
Well, you talked about your various properties. Lennar's target market was once luxury. Still the focus?
You know, when we started this business, I mean, I think diversification was the key, you know, the key principle. I mean, we want to be diversified geographically. I mean, we're in all the major markets across the country. And the other thing is we wanted to be diversified on is our product type. So high rise, mid rise, garden, you know, we've really been doing all of those. And I think that one of the benefits of that is that, you know, it's a blended portfolio. And I mean, the returns that you generate on a high rise are going to be less than the returns you might generate on a garden deal. So the blended returns, I think, are really pretty exciting. And when we're out talking to investors and things, I think that's one of the things they look at when we talk about raising a fund is kind of the opportunity to be geographically diversified, product diversified, and then you get to have the blended returns, which are, you know, I think pretty strong.
Today, what are Lennar's targets for development? Central business districts, major metros, suburbs, secondary metros, and what are the metrics that make it so?
So, you know, I would say today we're more focused on suburban opportunities, rather than the urban core. But we're still focused on the urban core too. We're going to take and maintain, our commitment to our strategy of being diversified. But I would say there's a bigger focus now on suburban opportunities because, frankly, I think that's where some of the growth is headed right now. I mean, I think there is to some extent a flight from the urban core because of COVID. I do think that will reverse itself. I think it's going to take a while. I think, we've got to get COVID under control. We've got to get people back to work. And that, frankly, is going to take 3 to 5 years. So I don't think you'll see that return to the urban core for 3 to 5 years. The urban core is still doing very well. I mean, our collections and our occupancies have remained strong throughout this whole downturn. But, you know, clearly there's a lot more demand, I think, headed for the suburbs. So we're probably more focused on suburban opportunities right now. But generally, we've got things at every product type, urban, mid-rise, high-rise, and garden going everywhere.
That's fantastic. Well, that's good to hear. So your urban core is still performing.
Urban core is still performing. It still is performing. But clearly, like I say, people are moving to the suburbs. Mm-hmm.
So overall, from an overarching perspective, in the 70s, when the boomers were coming of age, the U.S. was producing over 700,000 apartments annually. Recently, the millennials, an even larger generation, has come to age to a far different housing supply, less than half the run rate of the 70s. What explains this, and what can be done to boost the production of housing in America?
You know, we have had a shortage of housing and shelter for a very long time. And I think most of the home builders and the apartment developers, I think we're operating at a very high level right now. But we're not delivering enough product. And I don't see that coming to an end. I don't see us all of a sudden being able to produce the kind of numbers that we're going to need to take and solve the shortage, the housing shortage. So I don't have a good answer for that. I think, there's capital restraints. There's zoning and entitlement restraints. there's a lot of things that you're up against. And I don't see an end to that anytime soon. I think there's going to be, you know, we're going to be restricted and, you know, and I don't see just an awful lot of product coming online. And frankly, I mean, it's probably a good thing for our business because it maintains very strong demand and pricing power.
Right. Although it doesn't fare well for for the population. The largest
it's department. A lot of people that, you know, I don't see any way for that to, for us to be able to meet that kind of demand. I mean, 700,000 units is an awful lot of units, and that it's, you know, 350 to 400 is about what I think we're geared up to produce on an annual basis in the good times.
We've both seen that market, and it was lively.
It was a good time. Right. One of the things I think that is going to really sort of determine where we build is going to be, you know, how are companies going to reopen? I mean, are companies going to go back to their offices, or are we going to stay virtual? You know, what's going to happen there? Because, I mean, one of the things, obviously for, you know, the fundamentals in our business, we focus on transit. We focus on, where are people employed, the employment centers. We focus on entertainment and shopping. Those are the kinds of things that we are always looking to, try and make sure that they're in our neighborhood. And I just don't know. I don't know where that's going to go exactly anymore. I mean, what are the employment centers going to look like? I mean, is the virtual thing here to stay? That's going to take and it really change kind of where the growth happens, I think.
Well, I would only ask you this because you have made some extremely prescient moves in your life and very timely with regard to market trends. What's your speculation on that? Will we go back to business as usual, or are we changed forever?
I think we've changed forever. I think that the ability to take and operate our businesses virtually is that's been mind-boggling to me. I never thought this could happen. I mean, I traveled, and up until March 2nd of this year, I traveled 3 days a week. Every week, I was in the air. I was in a different city. I was someplace, and that's changed forever. I think I can be as effective, virtually, without doing all the travel. The travel is a lot of wear and tear, and frankly, I don't get as nearly as much accomplished because I'm not accomplishing anything when I'm in a restaurant or in an airport or, traveling. You can't get anything done. So, you know, the thing that's amazed me is how, you know, we and others are just operating at such a high level, you know, virtually. That's not something I expected. And I think a lot of the innovation and the connectivity that we have today, I think, you know, people are going to really focus on how do we make that even better. And it's already pretty good, but I think there's got to be ways to make it better. And I think automation and innovation and connectivity is going to be something that we need to keep our eye on, because I think that'll really help us, do it even better virtually. So I think we're going to see people travel less. I think the ability to do business virtually, first of all, it's way, way cheaper, way more, easier on people, and you just get so much more accomplished and everything. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest changes we see. And I think that does that translate into, not as many people need office space. I don't know. I mean, one of the things I think we've begun to notice, even though we've been operating very well virtually, is that I think the one-on-one, the in-person, connectivity that I think that's an important thing too. I think, there's going to have to be a blend of that. So I think, there's a lot of us that are anxious to get back to some of that, but not nearly at the level we were before COVID. I think the virtual model is going to take and make some big changes in our lives.
Wow. I have a couple neighbors who are pilots for United, and they're hoping you're very wrong.
But I see. Well, It's gonna be interesting. But I think the virtual thing, like I say, I think there's going to be some innovation, and automation, and I think that's going to make this even better. I mean, look at what we're doing today. I mean, this is pretty amazing. You know, I mean, I'm on Zoom calls and Microsoft Teams calls all the time, and they're really effective. So anyway, I think that's going to be a change that's going to be here with us. And frankly, not traveling as much has been a real benefit for me.
Right. Well, productivity is the highest import, so you can't knock that.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I don't think I ever really fully appreciated how much, how much time I spent in an airplane and in an airport and in an Uber and whatever, and just, the lack of productivity when you're doing that is really come to life for me now that I'm not doing it all the time.
Oh, I'm sure. It's really changed things a lot. The largest apartment developer in the country produced just over 2% of the new units in 2019. Mm-hmm. Are there economies of scale that would support industry consolidation, or is development so dependent on local knowledge that the little guys can hold their own?
Well, my observation there is, we're operating in all the major markets across the country. And one of our goals is to be one of the top five developers in each one of those markets. And I think we've achieved that across the country. And the interesting thing is, when you look at the markets, look at the top five developers in each of these markets, it's really a blend of regional, national, and local developers. I think that's true in almost every single market that we operate in. And development is really a local business. So I think there's always opportunity for a local developer to compete with a well-capitalized, corporate, institutional developer like ourselves, and even some of the larger regional developers. So I don't see that happening. I think, it's like I say, a local business. I mean, capital is going to be attracted to the real estate and to the sponsorship of the deal. And there's a lot of really good local developers who are able to, really assemble and craft a really, really great projects because of their local knowledge. So I don't see that changing.
Wow. That's fantastic. That fares well for local economies, certainly. Ed, thank you for taking the time to join us and sharing your great insights. What a super show. This has been another great episode of NAHB Power Hitters. Ed Easley is one of the nation's greatest examples of nimbleness in times of tumult, as well as good times. It's this tenacity and strategic brilliance that make our country great and our housing providers amongst the most exceptional. I'm Linda Hoffman. See you on our next exciting episode of NAHB Power Hitters, when we'll speak with Justin McDonald, President and CEO of McDonald Property Management. See you then.